I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the TV of 1999 from Aunt Kathy's Gremlin here in 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Neibart.
And I'm Phyllis Goh.
And with us to discuss one of the finer episodes of standout so much that NBC didn't even air it, episode of Freaks and Geeks is Ashley Lyle, one of our favorite guests. Thank you for returning, Ashley.
Yay, I'm back.
This is three. Right?
This is three.
Three Timers Club.
I'm gunning for Mel.
Yeah, no, record. I mean, that's you'll get there.
Is Mel at four?
Mel's at four. Yeah. Yes. Emily Vanderwerf is that's five. That's the gold ring.
Yeah, but she's in a class of her own.
A little bit.
I'm not under any illusion.
You are also in a class of your own.
It's true.
It's a different class.
It's a specific class. It's the drive me crazy class. I mean, like, it's
Was fun. Which, we had fun.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I know I texted Phil about the immediate drive me crazy connection to Freaks and Geeks.
Do you know what the immediate connection is?
Did this not come up?
It probably did. The first
character that you see, I think the first character with a line in Freaks and Geeks is Brad from Drive Me Crazy.
That's Brad.
Yeah. Doing the same character.
Yeah, he plays such a beautiful idiot so well.
Exactly. That guy had a real big year.
He's like the guy who played James Franco's friend, except homeless. You know that we.
What's the actor's name?
Clement Blake, I think.
Yeah, Clement. Yeah, that sounds right.
And I'm kind of obsessed with him because he's only played homeless guys.
The guy who shows up at the kegger.
Okay.
The old man that shows up.
The old man, Grandpa.
Yeah, yeah.
He's played a homeless guy no less than 10 times.
10 times.
He's got a real vibe.
He's got a homeless guy vibe.
Yeah,
he's a homeless man
and a dangerous vibe.
Yeah, he's not your neighborhood friendly homeless man.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's not that. He's not those homeless men who can play the violin or
The soloist, like
that's
Jamie
what I'm talking
Fox
about. He's not Jamie Foxx, or he's not Joe Pesci's secret, genius and
with honors. Yeah,
yeah. Most homeless men in movies are like secretly super talented. Yeah. Not Clement Blake. He eats your fingernails.
So here we are, Freaks and Geeks, episode 4.
Yep.
Kim Kelly is my friend. I'm going to read a synopsis real quick, and then we'll dive in. Kim's friend Karen, played by Rashida Jones, bullies Sam, writing "pygmy geek" on his locker. Sam doesn't take to the label kindly and finds himself in an argument with Neil over who is geekier, as Sam is assigned to write a 500-word essay about vandalism in the school. Kim invites Lindsay to dinner, explaining that she needs to introduce a nice friend to her parents so they stop hassling her to sell her car. And after Lindsay realizes what an abusive home Kim is living in, the two flee the scene in Kim's car. When Lindsay suggests that Kim lie low at the Weir house, the Weirs find themselves in for a long night. Kim Kelly Is My Friend was written by Mike White, directed by Leslie Linka Clatter, and aired on September 5th, 2000. So it was originally supposed to air on NBC on November 6th, 1999, but was replaced by another episode and was never aired on NBC. NBC actually banned the episode when season one was airing in 99 because of the darker content, which is insane.
It's also insane when the episode that was aired in its place is far more problematic.
Yeah.
But –
It premiered on the West
Coast.
That's
a little tease for next week. I won't tell you what that episode is.
When Ashley's husband does Tess and Breasts. Premiered on...
So no tease anymore.
No tease. Premiered on some West Coast stations on April 30th, 2000. It had a wide release on September 5th, 2000 on the Fox Family Channel and is the most edited episode ever to air on the Fox Family Channel. You would think that this episode was contraband. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what about this episode is so crazy.
The only thing that upon rewatching it, I was like, oh, that's a lot to watch, is actually the confrontation between Kim and Daniel.
Daniel, yes.
Because there's some legitimate sort of domestic violence involved.
Yes, there is.
That is really hard to watch in sort of today's today's time and perspective.
When we had Alan Sepinwall on for the pilot, he mentioned that he had talked to some executives and wondered what – and apparently, and this seems odd to me, the scene that threw them the most was the scene when the father attacks the car. They said it was too scary.
Absurd.
Which is
That's great. Ridiculous.
Absurd. It's a lie.
Yeah. What you just said was is far more psychologically upsetting.
Upsetting.
But
I almost wonder, you know, knowing how, you know, as we know how television gets made, obviously there are notes calls at every stage. You know, the studio and the network are reading outlines. They're reading scripts. They're seeing dailies. So it feels – I wonder if somebody put their foot down and somebody dug their heels in. It's interesting to me that something that could get to a point where the network would refuse to air it would get to the point of being filmed and put together, you know, in a cut. So
yeah.
It's an – yeah, I'm
when you know that there's so many layers of notes that come along the way, you're just like, how did we get to this stage? And they're like, no.
Well, the other thing Alan said that I think is relevant is this is an important kind of hinge episode for Kim's character.
Totally.
And Kim, you know, as we also discussed, like really does drive so much of the action in the beginning part of the show. Without this episode, you take this episode out, there's no way to really understand why Kim and Lindsay become friends.
Yeah.
Or get a real understanding of Kim, like just as a character. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
That understanding of her backstory.
For sure. So – maybe that does kind of explain why they went through the process of making it because it is such a critical episode. And then upon seeing it, I still don't understand what happened when they saw it that they're like, no, they're not going to like this in Iowa. But maybe. I don't know.
It's kind of baffling. And it makes this episode feel – because I remember reading about it. Because I didn't watch Freaks and Geeks when it first aired. It was on a box set similar to you, Kenny, I think, probably a couple years after
I watched it. Yeah, and I certainly didn't watch it in 99, but I did buy it in college.
Right.
So by 2003, 2004, I'd seen the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember the rumors around this episode. Like I remember reading the either online or in the pamphlets and the box set, like that this was – It felt dangerous, like this episode that was banned. Whenever anything's banned, you're just like, oh my God. And then I'm just like,
yeah, what? Then it's To Kill a Mockingbird. It's like, come on, guys. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Catch on the Rye.
It's crazy.
What? They,
so,
they said fuck? I say fuck all the time.
It's true. On this podcast.
I do. I say fuck a lot. Yeah. My kids think podcasts are just excuses for people to say fuck.
They're not.
They are. My kids are right.
So this show. for you, Ashley.
Yeah.
When did you see it? When did it sort of, you know, really kind of...
I was similar to you guys. I think
In so many ways.
In almost all ways. But specifically with regards to Freaks and Geeks, I definitely bought the box set. I did not watch it on television. I did not watch it in 99. And I think it was around the same time, probably around 2003, 2004. So something must have happened at that point to make us all aware of it. In a way that I don't.
I mean, the cast, right? They become movie stars in a way.
By then, though. Like,
no.
Well, you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin wasn't until a few years after that.
Fair enough.
And before 40-Year-Old Virgin,
Apatow wasn't really a thing.
Apatow wasn't a thing. Rogan wasn't a thing. Siegel wasn't a thing. Yeah. So, for me at least, I read every episode. I'm sorry, every issue of Entertainment Weekly. Mm-hmm. Entertainment Weekly never shut up about this show.
Huh.
From the moment it came out, for years and years and years, whenever they would do a retrospective, it was this Buffy they never shut up about. So that kind of made me watch Buffy.
Yeah, it was this Buffy and Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars they never shut up about.
And I remember for the longest time being like, I don't think I want to watch this Nancy Drew bullshit. I mean, yeah, go figure. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. But it took a while for me to sort of – I think there were a few shows that were these critical darlings that eventually
they would bang the drum for these shows in a time when, you know, before Twitter or whatever, when like people weren't talking.
I'd also include Gilmore Girls on that list for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a weird thing that you and I both share is I wouldn't say like I was super versed in the WB shows, but when Entertainment Weekly, which really did kind of lead me along by the nose, bang the drum for these shows. I watched every episode of Buffy. I watched every episode of Freaks and Geeks. I watched every episode of Veronica Mars and a lot of Gilmore Girls, shows that like I wasn't really seeking out. Like I'd never watched like an Everwood, for instance. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about the show that stuck with you or why you sort of – I mean because it's to buy a box set, you know, and to watch the whole thing, you know.
I mean, I think it might be the most realistic depiction of high school that I've seen. I think it's a toss-up between this and My So-Called Life. And what's interesting is that I didn't even put together the pieces so much until I rewatched it now, but I'm like, oh, man, I mean, Lindsay Weir is Angela Chase. It's the exact same story of, you know, good girl with the good family who does well in school, who all of a sudden, you know, wants to hang out with the bad kids and the tension that causes. I mean, like Millie is, oh my God, the cheerleader. Why can I not think of, I can picture her.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah. She has a real like Polish last name. What?
Thanks,
bro. I can picture her, but.
Are you talking about her friend?
Her friend.
AJ? No.
I don't know. There's Rayanne. Rayanne is the new friend.
Rayanne's like a freak.
Yeah, Ran is the Kim Kelly, essentially.
Yeah, sort of. She's like all different of them, version. Kind of.
Right.
And then like
Patty?
Nope. Patty's her mom.
Sharon.
Okay. Sharon. I wanted to say Sue, but it
What's so really embarrassing Sharon is I can't Millie, think of Jared Leto's character's name.
Like, oh my God.
Jordan
Catalano. Okay.
I wish you all could have seen.
I know. She's
one of my favorite possessions is on my purse sitting right next to me, and it's a pin on my purse that says, Jordan Catalano can't read this pin.
So Jordan, what's so incredible to me.
The most Ashley thing that's ever.
Is they both lusted after these future Oscar nominees, one of whom won an Oscar.
Yeah, they both lusted after future Oscar nominee dirtbags. Both in character and in real life.
Yeah. Leto's a different brand of dirtbag. Leto's like a I mean – Franco's kind of your garden variety dirtbag, I think, but like Leto's thing is so out there.
It's so weird.
They've never made anything like him before. Shia LaBeouf is super weird, right?
Sure.
But like Shia LaBeouf, like I still kind of understand. Like I don't understand Jared Leto at all.
No.
I don't get it.
No.
I don't know what he's doing.
I don't think we're meant to.
Do you think he gets it?
No.
That's how it kind
of – I think this is one of those mysteries that the universe just creates.
Remember when he won an Oscar?
It's absurd.
He won an Oscar.
Remember when he won an Oscar and then, like, in rapid succession, there were stories of him sending used condoms to his castmates?
Yeah. Well, he's a joker, you know? He's a real joker, that joker.
He's a real stinker.
He's a real stinker. He's the weirdest Oscar winner, right? Weirder than Monique? Those are the two weird ones to me.
Jared Leto is – he just played the game. And by that I mean he did a role and then he did the circuit.
Have you seen
I have seen that movie.
He
was really good. I'm not saying he was bad in it. I'm just saying in terms of like an Oscar campaign and like doing the whole due diligence.
We put him on too much of a weird pedestal, like he's no Crispin Glover.
Did Crispin Glover win an Oscar?
But Crispin Glover's
no,
weird.
But he doesn't need an Oscar to.
I think Crispin Glover knows everything he's doing at all times. Don't you?
I can't tell.
I don't know.
That's the beauty of him. I think he probably does, but he seems even more in control of it, but also so much weirder than Leto that I feel like he's just in a different class.
Crispin Glover is in a little bit of an Andy Kaufman universe to me.
Yes, that's how I feel.
Yeah. But anyway.
That's another big movie we need to do.
Yeah.
Man on the Moon.
So
look forward to that, guys.
Rashida Jones looks the same.
She also does not she does not look like a teenager to me in this in a way that everybody else – and, it's always so interesting, and I think one of the great parts is seeing the difference between how young, Sam and his friends look and how much older. But I think that they walk the line. Bart, who will have things to say about this, I'm sure, in the next episode, he feels like they look a little old, but I
–
The freaks. Okay. I buy them.
Well, their ages – they're relatively age-appropriate. We went through
except
that on the
Linda
pilot.
Cardellini.
Yeah, Cardellini's 24, but you wouldn't – I don't think she looks 24.
No, she doesn't look 24.
But I don't know. She doesn't look 16 either.
She doesn't
quite
look 16.
But
looks 16 enough for me.
Yeah. Works. 16 I think it works.
Enough. But Rashida has an energy that I like in this. She doesn't necessarily look age-appropriate, but there's a weirdness to her energy that I kind of appreciated.
The one thing that that rang a little false to me, because and what's interesting is this show is usually so on point with being just so realistic and triggering in terms of high school memories, but I never witnessed that thing where an older girl would bully a younger boy. It seemed like girls could be very cruel and they could be very mean, but they wouldn't tend to cross gender lines as much. And both gender and age lines,
so
I feel like.
Kim Kelly does it in the pilot.
She does.
It is the pilot, right? When she with Sam, when she's like, "Do you want to kiss me?" So Kim does it in the pilot. I'm going to disagree with you in that there was a girl in my school who's a year older than me. Now, there weren't really bullies. To be honest, like there weren't – as far as I can tell, there weren't like push people in their locker bullies in my high school. I don't remember that thing.
Yeah.
But there was a tougher older girl who like if you came to the party and you weren't friends with her, she'd kind of push you around.
Really?
I guess in a weird way.
Not physically, but kind of like,
she would
kind of enforce. She was a bit of an enforcer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like what's interesting is that I buy the moment with Kim early where she fucks with him with the whole do you want to kiss me thing. But the escalating Rashida Jones Karen thing with the locker, that just I get the storyline and I get what they're doing.
It's the less interesting part of the episode.
Yeah, it's weird that in the synopsis they lead with that storyline because I'm like, that is a B story for sure.
So
bearing the lead.
The other thing about Rashida for me in this episode is maybe it's because, I've seen her in so many other things playing a different type of character. She's not mean. She like even when she's being nice, she still seems so nice.
I agree with that. She's Ann Perkins.
Seems
hard
so,
to see her not as Ann Perkins.
It is, Ann Perkins,
or
but also
any of the other characters.
Yeah, what was it? Character in
Karen
The Office.
Was on The Office.
Yeah,
her character name was Karen.
So like those characters, or other characters she's played, where she's just read so sweet to me. And I remember this like
– I get that.
I remember because I also think she's like really gorgeous. So I remember even before I knew her being like that gorgeous girl at the time still didn't feel like the kind of girl who would be bullying – wasting her time bullying some
it's a little bit. It does feel a little bit like plot mechanics. Like it does feel like they need this character to do this thing, so it's going to be. But I guess what I'm getting at is there's a vulnerability, I guess, to Karen that I think is interesting. Like you say that it doesn't ring true, and I kind of maybe I'm giving it too much credit. Think that's part of it. Like I don't know that we're supposed to believe that this person is really an asshole.
Yeah, I think that it might have been a little more successful for me if they didn't try to cram this story into one episode.
Yes, because this character never comes back.
She never comes back, and there is something really interesting there where she and Kim obviously have there's a tension in their friendship, and you know she is clearly flirting with Daniel in the park, and so
there's an insecurity to her that I think is interesting. Like that scene in the park and what she's playing with fire.
It would have been nice to have, you know, her character in that story. I mean, the one slight, if I had to nitpick this show, which I think is mostly almost perfect, it's that it is, you know, really skewed towards the male characters. And you really just got Lindsay and Kim.
Well, Alan Sepinwall kind of underlined that too, where it's like My So-Called Life felt like it was more of a female POV, and this show feels like it's more of a male.
You know, it's fine. You know, Paul Feig is obviously speaking more to his experience, and he was going to have the experience of a teenage boy and not a teenage girl. But you know, I think it could have benefited from just rounding out the female characters a little bit more.
Well, it's the six upper level writers on this show are all men.
All men, and you can
and
can
the directors,
feel it.
I think almost every episode was directed by a man. Yeah. And, you know,
it's interesting that this one wasn't, though.
And I think it's no coincidence that, I mean, Mike White, who I am just an enormous fan of, when I first moved to LA, one of my first celebrity sightings, I just did the finger quotes on celebrity, because I feel like to me he is a massive celebrity, but I'm not sure that he would be to, you know, my parents back home. I saw Mike White. It was like day two in LA, and we went to Real Food Daily because I was just really just jumping
in.
Deep end to Los Angeles Living, and Mike White was there, and I like lost my mind. I like couldn't concentrate. Bart, my husband, was like, "What is your problem?" I was like, "It's Mike White."
Did you say what's up?
No, I was terrified.
You should have said something.
But because Chuck and Buck is – I love – and I just – Enlightened is one of my favorite shows. And what I will say
when did you move to LA? Like 3 weeks ago?
I moved to LA in end of 2006, early 2007.
So this is obviously post-Chuck and Buck.
School of Rock had come out? Yeah.
Right around then.
Yeah.
I was just starstruck. But I think that he writes women really well.
He does.
I think Enlightened is fucking awesome.
It's incredible.
If anyone listening has not watched Enlightened, I highly recommend it.
Certainly any fan of Big Little Lies, if you want to see Laura Dern in her purest
form.
One Mike White thing I wanted to ask you, have you watched Survivor with him on it?
I think it was the race one. Wasn't that the one he was on?
No. It was just 2 years ago he was on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was he not on the race one too with the part?
Mike White was on Survivor.
He was a contestant on Survivor.
And he was everything you'd hoped he would have been.
I can't believe that I didn't know this. And this is terrible news for me because we are on draft and I don't have time to watch a season of Survivor. And that's all I want to do now. So I hope that Jason and my showrunner are not listening because this will explain a little bit of why
I think you can get it on like CBS.com or whatever, the whole season. I don't want to give really anything away There have been a lot of celebrities on that show, weirdly. Every 3 or 4 years, some random like B-list celebrity or some athlete will be on or whatever. They don't always come off well. He comes off so fucking well.
Okay.
This is so exciting. Wonderful.
I want to watch it. I haven't watched Survivor since the second season.
Survivor is the best show.
I mean, Bart and I used to have when we lived in our first just shitty apartment in Hollywood, we had a whiteboard on our kitchen on the fridge that was just exclusively for our Survivor rankings, and we would rearrange them.
That's fantastic.
You don't watch anymore?
I haven't watched it in a few years. We got away from it.
Well, my wife was on bed rest. Now this is 8 years ago. So we've been watching for a while. But we didn't watch ever. And then she's on bed rest with the twins. And we're like literally in our room constantly for 5 months. We just start up Survivor and we've never stopped.
It's so good.
It's so
I love it.
Good.
Oh, this is great news.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What are our feelings on the slut shaming that exists in this episode?
It felt real.
Mm-hmm. It felt genuine. I don't think that it's. I don't think the intent of it from a writing or a directing perspective was to slut shame, but it does feel like.
Who was slut shamed?
Kim slut shames Rashida pretty heavily after the whole sort of situation.
I mean, but it felt
And then
more,
they write slut on her locker at the
she
end.
She writes slut on her locker, but I mean, that felt to me less like. When I think slut shaming, I think of, you know, society or, you know, teenage boys. You know, calling a girl a slut,
right.
Double standard. I think in this case, yes, technically it's slut shaming, but it feels so much more sort of punitive.
Sure.
Than I think because Kim obviously
she's more hurt than anything.
She's more hurt than anything else. I think that it's you tried to steal my boyfriend, you fucking slut. As opposed to you're a slut because you do certain things with boys.
Right.
All right. I had forgotten this, but I'm still going to make comments.
classic.
Yeah, totally. The everything Ashley said, I agree with. Basically, when it's inside the context of a narrative, what matters is who's saying it and where the show comes down on it. We don't take anything Kim says as the word of the writers. So that's one thing.
Sure.
However, this is supposed to be the episode where we start to empathize with Kim a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the final word here, it sounds like, based on your recollection of this episode, which I watched, don't remember. so there's that.
Yeah.
So there's also that like the final kind of period on the end of the sentence is you're a slut and I win.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, this was 1999.
Yeah.
And again, six white guys sitting in a room might not have been up on how hurtful that could be.
Sure.
I'm not trying to condemn it too.
I mean, I think what's interesting is that it certainly doesn't go so far as to like condemn slut shaming, but I think it's being presented as a unpleasant thing.
Right. Yeah. No,
it's not condoning the behavior by any means. Yeah.
That's what I'm pushing up against a little bit.
Okay.
That's the if the final word from a triumphant character that you're supposed to sympathize with is you're a slut, therefore I win, then it does feel a little bit like the show is condoning it. I'm saying so. I'm more saying take it with a grain of salt because at the time that this was written, I don't think that a lot of men really understood that that was more than just an insult, that actually was kind of wrong-headed on its face. So you know what I mean? Like,
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is basically, calling someone a slut is not bad because it's a mean thing to say. It's bad because there's nothing wrong with being sexually free and experience your sexuality however you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that they understood that at the time.
That's quite possible. So this kind of dovetails into the conversation that the freaks have in the cafeteria where they're talking about – they're sort of alluding to Karen's sexual escapades.
Sexcapades,
as one could say. as one should have said, obviously. It sort of highlighted kind of how grimy these kids can be sometimes. Like there's this sort of – and I've mentioned this on previous episodes, but like these kids just look so dirty. I want to give them all a shower. Like they're all – their hair just looks like they haven't had a bath. Like it's just – what? You could make
– I don't want to give kids a shower.
You know what I mean.
Maybe my kids, Phil.
I know what you mean.
Jesus Christ.
I want to pay for their shower.
But they just look like they just – look gross.
Which is – I mean teenagers are gross. That's I think one of the more realistic parts of this show.
Sure.
In fact, they should be grosser if they really wanted to go for verisimilitude.
It's also it's a little bit of a period thing too. Like I feel like kids in the 80s, teenagers in the 80s just all looked kind of burnout and gross. It makes me think of – and this is sort of specific but strange reference. But do you remember in Boogie Nights when we turn over to the 80s and Philip Baker Hall shows up with all those like 80s porn stars and they all look just gross. Like,
yeah,
they're all
boys, and, girls.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's gross. So it's just, there's
Johnny Wadd.
Yeah, Johnny.
Is that his name?
Yeah, his name's Johnny Wadd. Fuck that movie. But like, there's just something about the period almost more so than these specific kids. Like, everyone just looked gross back then, I thought. Either that or they were wearing like neon and they looked like pop stars.
It wasn't Johnny Wadd. That's actually John. That's the character John Holmes played in actual porn films.
I can't wait till we can really get into porn in the next episode.
What? Oh, the next episode of this show. Yes, of course. I'm going to find out what his name was. It wasn't Johnny.
Okay, so we're in the cafeteria. One of my favorite bits in the cafeteria sequence is Lindsay sitting at the table next to those other kids.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a heavyset kid and a girl with a massive headgear. And then Nick comes and sits down across from her. And they're just like not even acknowledging that there's two other humans at this table. They're so peripheral that just it feels like it's just so that time where like some kids just didn't exist to you and you're just in your own shit. I just loved it.
I will admit when I watched that scene last night, I did think of you and your
– Yeah, I had to wear headgear.
Yeah.
You mean in life?
Amazing.
I wish everyone could just have seen I had a
big curly afro and headgear I had to wear over it to
sleep.
To junior high.
No, to school.
To school. It was a dark time in junior high.
I'm not embarrassed. I'm upset for you. You're my friend. I can't believe you had to go through that.
Yeah.
It was only for about a month.
Whatever, dude.
Scars. They're still there.
He also has a really good story, but I feel like that's
No, please,
time.
Please.
Oh, I mean, I'm not
Which story are you referring to?
Johnny Doe, not Johnny Wash.
Okay, cool.
Referring to the – it was something to do with you being called to the –
Oh, that was yeah. I can tell the story. I'm fine with this, and this actually feels very akin to a Freaks and Geeks story.
This makes sense. Apropos.
So I had a panic attack in junior high.
What a shock!
Shocking. And
I can't believe you only had one.
Well, this was the first, and and so my hands started to go numb because I was hyperventilating.
Sure.
And I was convinced I was having a stroke, so I ran to the principal's office and.
As one does.
And I was like, I'm dying. Someone needs to call 911 or whatever. And she looked at me. She's like, okay, you're fine. But like, sit down over there. So I go and sit down. And our PE teacher, whose name was called Boner Boyd, because he always wore sweatpants and he was always al dente. Like, he was always sort of.
That's what the kids called, the Boner Boyd.
Yes.
Where they call him to his.
His name was Mr. Boyd.
Everyone is really funny. That's the funniest Canadian joke I've ever heard.
Well, so Mr. Boyd sees me panicking in the sort of lobby of the principal's office, and he's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, no, I think I'm dying. Like, I think I'm having a stroke." And he sits down next to me, and he like puts his hand on my shoulder to like try to calm me down. And some kid sees this, and then starts spreading rumors that Boner Boyd is sexually molesting me throughout the school.
Oh, no. So did you have your headgear?
Not on me at the time.
But this really paints a picture, doesn't it?
I think you understand why I am the way I am now. Anyway, at the very least.
Makes me think you're a better writer than I did a second ago.
So that happened.
Oh man, I got nothing like that. That's some shit, Phil.
Yeah, so that happened. Good times. Yeah.
So appropriate for this.
I love Phil's Boner. So everyone just called
Boner Boyd.
Was he aware of Boner Boyd?
I'm sure.
Al
dente?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what that means in this context.
When pasta is a little bit too hard.
It is what you meant. Okay. I was hoping you were using the wrong term.
Nope. That's why they called him Boner Boyd.
He was always a little too hard.
Yeah, and everyone was just like, and he's wearing sweatpants, which just accentuates it.
He just had a big dick, obviously.
Whatever.
Yeah. A little too hard. This guy should have been fired.
This poor man was just trying to provide some emotional comfort.
To a panicking. But that's that happened.
Is this the episode with our next episode is with Tom Wilson when he boner boids him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
which actually made me think of that as I was watching it.
Oh,
so,
God.
So there you go. There you go.
I'm fucking done.
Anyway, so Sam's forced to write about vandalism, which feels so high school for someone to be like, write a 500-word essay on why vandalism is bad.
To me, that feels a little more middle school. There are a few things in this show that I think they're conflating middle school stories and high school stories a little bit, but I'm fine with it because the fact is, I mean, it also, especially for me, because my middle school went up to ninth grade, so ninth grade was still middle school. And, oh, man, my brother and his friends just were Sam Weir and his
felt a lot of Sam Weir. First of all, I looked – as I sent a picture to you, Kenny, I looked a lot like Sam Weir. I had, like, big curly hair and I was small for my age.
But you were cute.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, that's a nice way.
I don't think that Sam Weir's unattractive.
No, I mean –
he's cute, too.
I love –
he has this ridiculous teeth.
He does have ridiculous teeth.
That's why you got your teeth fixed.
It's true.
I love in this show how Cindy, you know, does like him.
Yes.
You know, I think that's also realistic. That there wasn't, you know, there's a lot more gray area in high school, and I think that the show really nails that.
I totally agree.
I think a kid like Sam.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Would have been a viable partner for a girl like Cindy.
Future Republican, Cindy.
Future Republican. Whereas Neil and Bill, never in a million years. So,
yeah,
even though he rolls with Neil and Bill, I think I think there is something to him that, you know, there's potential there.
Yeah, I think part of it is that
– and like John Francis Daly grows up to be a good-looking man.
Yeah.
So, you know, she saw it. She should have had him sign like a 12-year contract.
There's something to the fact that Bill and Neil are – I mean, Bill has the physical limitations, let's just say, that are accentuated, which is that he's sort of an odd-looking person, the glasses, all of it. Neil is just so aggressively
– Jewish.
I was going to say Neil, but you know what I mean? Like the Shatner impressions and the whatever and all of it.
That kid also,
100%. Yeah. I just mean that's why he wouldn't be appealing to because you're just like, I don't know what to do with this. Sure. Whereas Sam's just like, he's a nice kid. He's just kind of nerdy.
Looking at grown up John Francis Daly pictures, it was like we haven't really talked about John Francis Daly at all because like everyone else's career has been kind of a straight line, right? Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen is basically still Seth Rogen. Jason Segel is basically still Jason Segel. Like, they're basically just grown-up versions of these people. Linda Cardellini and Judd Apatow and Paul Feig, Mike White, all of them are basically just the grown-up versions of the people.
Which they wrote to, I'm assuming, right?
Of course. Yeah. John Francis Daly is a little random kid who had never acted before.
Never. 14. Right?
14-year-old random kid who then goes on to disappear, period, for 10, 15 years, reemerges as, like, the biggest fucking comedy screenwriter in –
Well, he's on Bones, right? Was he on Bones for a while?
Maybe as an actor, he's on Bones.
But he was like, adult.
So I believe he wrote Horrible Bosses.
Yeah. He did, yeah.
And then
he directs as well.
Right? And now they did Game Night.
Game Night's great.
And Game Night was awesome.
Game Night's great.
No, no, he's good. He's really top good. I'm not trying to say he's like a he's like good.
Yeah.
But he's probably the number one go to. Him and his partner Jonathan Goldstein are probably the number one go to comedy rewrite guys in town.
I have to assume that he had good parents. Is maybe my guess.
In terms of the gap.
Keeping him away.
Keeping, insisting that he, go to college and
learn to read.
Which
Jordan Catalano's parents did not insist upon.
Also, I mean, there's a difference between, he was 14. I think Jason was,
Jason was 19.
19? Because I know that he.
Hold on, I have this at the ready.
The movies these people have made. Like the movie, like look at the.
He was 19.
Look at this. This is insane. Between Franco, Siegel, Rogan, and John Francis Daly, the movies that they've been on the other side of the camera on, and Rashida Jones, for that matter, it's nuts.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, obviously on the in front of the camera as well, when you look at like Martin Starr's career, obviously with Silicon Valley, Cardellini. I mean, it's crazy.
This casting director was a fucking genius.
A genius.
Well, like she's the biggest.
She's the biggest casting director.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's amazing stuff. It's crazy to think of how green they were as actors. And again, it's a testament to the writers to be able to see the strengths, to see who they were, to read them as people, and then to write to them in that way is just so important.
Right.
It's amazing stuff.
Well, I know it's interesting because Jason has said that Apatow would, very early on, he said something. I will probably be massacring this anecdote because it was said over dinner and I had had some wine. But but he basically said that Apatow was like, I don't know if any of you guys are good enough to really make it as actors. So I'm going to teach you to write. And so he would write. Apparently they were doing like rewrites on stuff. He was like, he got free work out of us all the time on different projects. Yeah. But he did teach them all how to write.
I think Rogan was in the undeclared writer's room, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's true.
Yeah.
And but they're all also like clearly really, really smart, ambitious people.
Yeah.
Who understand their lane, like understand what they're bringing to the table, like understand what people like about them. Like that understanding is paramount, right? Like to be able to sort of say like, I get what America digs about me and to deconstruct that in various ways, I think is interesting.
Well, very specific actors too.
So one of the things that I love in this episode is Lindsay's how skeptical she is of Kim wanting to be her friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like she just doesn't buy it and doesn't understand it. And it plays into the next episode as well, the manipulation of Lindsay, how each of the freaks see her and how she fits into their plans, I think is really interesting, and that she's justified in her skepticism is pretty amazing stuff.
They also never really completely cover how she gets in with this group, because it feels like Daniel is the one who's the point of entry and says like, this is my friend. But how on earth those two became friends is sort of a mystery.
What was it? You said that originally
originally
Fee didn't want – like she was already part of the crew.
I believe in the – I mean I don't believe. I believe I read in the original pilot she was in the crew. And then NBC said we don't really buy it or something. We have to show her entering the group. So I think they did a little lip service to that. And it was Daniel who brought her into the group.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of left out, I think, intentionally, like what that was. But to me, it's like – to me, it just seems like someone who spent a summer thinking long and hard about who she wants to be and decided to go back to school with her dad's army jacket, which is a decision that they shine a light on.
It's the Angela Chase red hair.
Yeah. Exactly. This year I'm going to be this person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it took.
Yeah.
And every once in a while it takes for – that would happen every year. Someone would come back from the summer and just kind of successfully switch groups.
I think there's also – I mean and I don't think NBC's note is bad. Like I actually think that us being – coming into this group with Lindsay I think helps. I think it helps you sort of feel as though you're being brought into this world a little bit. It makes it – It doesn't make it a premise pilot per se, but it just gives
you – It's a little premise-y.
It's a little premise-y, but it gives you a little bit of that. And I'm not – I appreciated it, I guess. And I like seeing this transition for her.
I think, too, the tension between the old life and the new life, it brings so much energy to her character and to the show. And
which
so,
I think you could still have had it if she was in – if we found her in the group or if she had recently become a part of the group. Whatever the case might be. I just – I think that I appreciated us.
I like it like this. Yeah, I think it's the right move. I also like this idea that Freaks and Geeks aren't so different.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like it really is kind of the same – the two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not the geeks we know. I'm talking about the three geeks we know. But if Harris had a cool summer, Harris could turn around and maybe be a freak next year. You know? Like Harris isn't that far off.
He's the best. He's not.
He's not. He's got the long – he's halfway there. Yeah. Little confidence, and if he, you know, gets a good weed hookup, like he could hang out with the freaks next year. So
he's got a girlfriend.
Yeah. Right? Got a girlfriend, yeah.
What's – I can't remember her name. But the, their relationship's amazing.
Harris is the dopest.
Harris is the best.
So Kim's car is amazing. This gremlin that is amazing. It's still running. I love her unloading all of her family stuff on Lindsay on the drive to the house. Lindsay doesn't know why she's telling her this stuff.
Yeah.
And then dumps like on the walk to the house all of this shit that she needs to keep – all these balls she has to keep in the air. And Dowd looking like a different person as the mom. The actress?
No, I know. Who did you – I remember seeing her on the credits. Dowd? Holy shit. Yeah, she was Kim Kelly's mom?
I did not pick up on that even a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Holy shit.
It's crazy.
That is crazy. I have to say the scene – the scene at Kim Kelly's house is probably my least favorite part of this episode.
It's the most kind of – it's dialed up too – yeah, it's dialed up too much. And which for a show that – delicately finds that balance of everybody being just heightened enough.
Yeah.
This
wow. She is really good in it though.
She's great.
She's very great. I don't think.
Although it's the combo of her and the dad.
The stepfather's not great.
No, he's not.
He's not a great actor. He's not and great. It's a little cliched.
I think he's a little too handsome.
Does Mike White ever show up again? I can't remember. Or is he just
couch surfing.
He's just Chip sleeping on the couch. Be quieter, you're going to wake Chip.
I wish he didn't have
brain
a line.
Damage.
I know.
He has a line, and I wish he didn't have any line.
Yeah. I agree with that.
It just would have been kind of a sillier joke.
I love Bill when they're talking about Karen saying, I think she's a sex fiend.
Girls don't get horny.
Well, see, that's true. Yeah, I mean,
this is a fact. Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, I can tell you from experience that's
so
true.
Lots so more about you.
I know it does.
I do love Kim saying Daniel is sexier than Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea was a bar that, like, Rod Stewart.
It's funny because I do sometimes forget that it's 80s. Even though they make it very clear with all the, you know, the set deck and the costumes and all that. But. I lose sight of it, and then they'll make a Rod Stewart reference, and I'm like, oh.
Right. It's literally impossible to believe that Ron Stewart was ever the bar for sexiness.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Literally impossible. Yeah. Chuck Klosterman just gave an interview to, I think it was New York Times Magazine or something like that. You know Chuck Klosterman?
Yeah.
Where they asked him, like, what book should you not read until you're 40? And he said, the autobiography of Rod Stewart.
That's great.
So when I turn 40, I'm going to crack that one open.
It also – it's funny too because with Karen, you know like she's trying and posturing to be a badass while rocking a Journey t-shirt. Like it's – that wasn't
– Journey's probably bad.
They're bad? Like bad like hardcore?
In Billy Madison – when he has to go to college and be cool or maybe with some other cool guy, he rocks that REO Speedwagon shirt.
Yeah.
Like those were the cool bands.
I
think Journey was cool.
There was no indie rock.
No, I know. But there
was
Led Zeppelin,
KCRW.
I think it was as Nick references earlier, it's disco is sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
We did a deep dive into Nick. With David in a previous episode, but I just David's extrapolation of that character made me love him that much more.
Yeah, I've.
Do you know what I mean?
I love him more than I did too.
He really kind of.
I really love the actor who plays him.
But I mean, there's a because Nick is – we'll just say he's thin for the first couple episodes. They don't really do much of a until Lindsay starts dating him reluctantly. Like, I just love that and Alan said
– You feel for him in the first few, though, because it's so obvious.
It's so obvious how much he's into her.
Yeah.
But Alan Sepinwall had a great story about how – I think Judd Apatow said that he just loved the idea of a relationship where one of the people really didn't want to be in it. And it's – I mean
– Oh, man.
It's rough.
It's rough, but it's great because you really get to see the building blocks of it. Even if we don't get a ton of Nick, what we do get of him really does speak to this sort of bravado performance sort of thing that he's putting on. It's so painful to watch.
Yeah.
We also talked a little bit about the credits, but Nick is one of my favorites in the credits too because of how perfect that laugh is, that high weird laugh that he gives at the beginning. It's just the best.
Well, he's a smiler.
Yeah,
and there's a big like in pictures. There's a pretty. It says a lot about you. The way you sit for a picture,
yeah.
And he's a smiler. Like, and the fact that he's a smiler betrays something about him that I don't think he'd probably want his friends to know.
That's fair.
You know.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, that's like the core of this character. And we got into this with the Millie thing with Jesus. What's the song?
Jesus, what is it?
Jesus is
Jesus all right.
Just Jesus
all
right, kicks ass. Jesus kicks ass.
It's from.
It's a real song.
It's a real song. From. Is it from a musical?
I'm looking it up
we'll
right
figure
now.
Figure it out. But when he said Jesus rules the world, it really there's this dichotomy, which is like he wants to have it both ways. He wants to be a freak and kind of make fun of the nerd. He also wants to, you know, sing, like, which I actually think is kind of what it comes down
to. Which is also.
Like, and play the drums.
Jason. I mean, like, he is just very musical.
I think Jason, based on all the characters he's played and what I know about his work, you know him as a person. I don't. But he does seem like somebody who hangs with the cool kids and also has, like, the soul of a poet.
I would say that that's accurate. He is a very sincere person.
Mm-hmm.
And a very nice person.
There's the great story about the vampire musical.
Well, yeah, the one that Apatow. So so he has Apatow over to his house and to play him the vampire musical, which ultimately is put into Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
And he plays it from earnestly, and Judd starts laughing, and Jason says, "What?" And he says, "Don't ever play that for another soul ever again."
I give him so much credit for finding a way. To get that out in the world.
It's the best.
And it's the best. I mean, I love that movie so much, but I think the vampire musical is what really sets that movie apart for me.
It's the best.
Like, that's when I fell in love with that character. Like, when he.
It's also the moment when Mila's character falls in love with him. When he starts singing that and she's laughing, and then she's just like, I love
that
this
guy.
That
takes a lot of confidence to know that would do it.
And he has, you know, he has the soul of a weirdo. And I think in a great. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think that. The reason I know him is because of the show I'm working on now, and it's a show he created. And it's
the show? And I'm not just being a dick. What's the show?
It's called Dispatches from Elsewhere. It will be coming out on AMC in I think February or March next year. It's gonna be great. It's Jason. It's Sally Field. It's Richard E. Grant and Andre Benjamin, and a new face named Eve Lindley. It's fucking great. I love it. It is something that I'm. Very proud to be working on, but it's a big swing and it's fucking weird.
Cool.
So I think
is it original?
It is loosely based. It's designed to be an anthology series, mm-hmm. So each season would be different, but it's loosely based on a real life thing. There's a documentary on Netflix called The Institute, which is fine. It's not a great documentary, but the thing it's about is really interesting. And I loosely describe it as if the movie The Game with Michael Douglas was a very weird comedy.
Cool. I love The Game.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Kenny loves The Game.
Love The Game.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something very sort of vulnerable about Jason and about Nick. And it's just kind of all bound into this relationship with this girl. And then there's the whole, like, Forgetting Sarah Marshall being loosely based on the relationship with Linda Cardellini, which is amazing too. So there's just a lot baked into it. It's just good stuff. And you can't even like really articulate it. Like it's all just a feeling that exists within all of this. It's really great.
I remember when that movie got announced, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and they announced that Kristen Bell would be playing Sarah Marshall. At this point, I was like fully inside of Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
And that spoke so well of him to me that he knew like this is the one, this is the, this is the train to get on. So
it's good.
It is. Oh God, that movie. It really holds up. It's great.
It really does.
I watched it on an airplane. I'd been wanting to rewatch it, but I was hesitant because of the opening and the fact
that for a plane.
So I was like, I'm going to watch this on an airplane so I don't have to see my friends / coworkers.
Oh, you watched the airplane version?
I watched the airplane version.
And they didn't have the...
They did not.
I watched the airplane version of Horrible Bosses, and they did have penis in that.
There was no penis, and I was delighted.
But you've seen it already. What's the big deal?
But, like, before I knew him, so...
Don't want to see it again.
Yeah, it's just like, I can't.
That's my second favorite Kristen Bell performance. Not my second favorite penis. That's my.
I was going to say, what's your first favorite penis?
Oh, Veronica Mars is my first favorite. Veronica, my first favorite penis is, of course, the prosthetic in Boogie Nights. And then
it's
my favorite Russell Brand by a billion trillion miles.
Great too,
he's so good.
He's really great.
Why didn't we get more of that?
Yeah.
The fuck?
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
I don't know either. So I do want to say, because I feel like we're going to start running out of time, and we somehow turned the big Kim Kelly and Lindsay episode into talking about all the boys.
Yes. No. I mean, a little bit.
I mean, but again, that's
87
fine.
Cents on a dollar. If we top that, we're good.
So we can hope for.
We get 88, that's progress.
I just wanted to say that my favorite part of this episode is when Kim comes to Lindsay's house. Because
I was literally just
Lindsay being kind of stuck between Kim and her parents.
Yeah.
And I just felt it so deeply because I was very Lindsay in high school. Like I got
just in high school though.
I guess forever. I don't know. Yeah. None of us really change. Yeah. But no, I was the nerdy kid, you know, who got good grades, but who wanted to, you know, I started to branch out and I would go to see bands all the time. I was still kind of nerdy, but you know, I was starting to straddle that line. And I remember specifically in particular, there was one time, this must have been like, I think it was the summer after junior, before senior year.
Okay.
And my best friend, Allison, who Phil knows. And Kenny, have you met
Past
Allison?
And future guest.
Yeah.
Past and future guest? Past? Allison Akel.
Yeah. Allison Akel,
of course, yes.
So she had gone to some sort of leadership camp. So keep this is the context. This is still firmly within this kind of group.
Imagine Allison Akel wanting to be in a leadership.
Sounds on brand. Yeah,
almost as hard to picture as Phil in his headgear. So,
God damn it.
So she had gone to this leadership camp, and then we were home for this summer, and there was a party down in Toms River, New Jersey. And so we went to this party, and I drove, so I had like a beer because I was terrified of, you know, drunk driving and et cetera. But we were going to give her friend a ride home, and her friend proceeded to get fucking hammered. So
a male friend or a female friend?
Female friend. Okay. So this girl gets fucking just wasted at this party. So we get her in the car and immediately we're like, oh no, this is bad. So then we go back to the party and feed her bread because we thought that it would soak up the alcohol.
It's such a
Which just meant that then she proceeded to throw up bread for like the next several hours. So we get to my house first because she lives – I don't even know where she lives. She decides that she can't go home because she'll get in trouble. So she won't tell us where she lives. So then we bring her to my house. She's immediately throwing up bread on the front lawn. And my parents come out and they're like, nope. Like she is not coming in this house. So now we're stuck because we don't know. It just like my parents like looking at this and like they weren't really mad at us because we clearly weren't drunk.
Yeah.
And like they trusted us because it was kind of the same relationship as like Lindsay and her parents. But they were like, you cannot put her in this house. Like we will not have it. And she wouldn't tell us where she fucking lived.
Oh my God.
So we just ended up like putting her to sleep on the front porch.
Oh my
for the night.
God.
And, you know, Alice and I stayed up, like, with her for a while to make sure she didn't get, like, murdered. It was also, like, this is Jersey Shore.
Then it got cold.
Then we got tired.
And we were like, we're going to bed.
Not sleeping on a porch.
No, it was hot. We wanted to go in the air conditioning in summer. And, you know, we didn't – it was, like, at some point, it was, like, 4 a.m. We were like, fuck it. So we just wrote a note. We wrote a note and left it on the front door. We were like, hi, we're inside for when you wake up. And
I love that.
Yeah, it was, but like my, just that feeling of seeing my parents be like super kind of, they didn't really know how to handle the situation. They just knew that they didn't really want anything to do with it. And I feel like that's exactly what was happening with Lindsay.
For sure. So there's good. Also something very.
I appreciate you telling that story.
I love that story. I think there's something funny and sad about
the way she
Kim
eats.
At the house, which is that. You know, she just wants a family. Like,
She just wants a fucking decent meal.
Well, that possibly too. But you can tell that she's just like so happy to be in. First of all, a house with walls. And a home and parents that care about their kids and you can sense that she's kind of eating that up
but
as well.
She's a little bit feral.
She is. She is. She is.
And I love her character so much. I think Busy Phillips just nails it because that's a type of girl and that you don't see in a lot of teen things. You know, it's always like the cool girl or the pretty girl or the nerdy girl or, you know, the slutty girl. But like the fact that she's, you know, she's tough, but she's also, you know, she has all the wants and hopes and fears. Yeah. You can feel simmering and her relationship with Daniel, like, you know, she's a little bit tougher. She's not, you know, super, I guess, you know, she's obviously feminine, but like, she's, you know, she feels like a real kid.
Well, she's from a broken home.
Yeah.
She's probably abused in one way or another, almost definitely emotionally abused. I think we witnessed that. She's necessarily has a tough exterior. She emotionally abuses her friends, physically abuses her boyfriend.
Yeah.
I think that, frankly, if we really want to psychologically analyze the executives at NBC, why they weren't comfortable with this episode, it was a depiction of a character like that. Yeah. Just the depiction of a lower class, lower class, aggressive 17-year-old. Made people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think that's what I really think that's what it comes down to.
Well, she's dangerous. Like her character feels dangerous, and I think that they just probably didn't know how to process
and they,
that.
And they go pretty hard with it. Again, and I don't say this necessarily as a criticism, but they are kind of taking plays out of the My So-Called Life playbook because there's the episode in My So-Called Life where Angela kind of gets the real on Rayanne and her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for a while she thinks – and they do it a different way. She thinks that Rand's mom is so cool because she's kind of more of a friend than a parent. And her parents are just kind of, you know, very normal, square parents. And then she sees that this is not a great situation and Rand doesn't really have a good parental figure. And she can't count on her mother and her mother's kind of a drunk and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's a very similar story to hear.
For sure.
But I think that – the edges to Rayanne are a little bit softer in My So-Called Life than what happens here.
Almost necessarily, though. Like because Rand's – so much is put on Rand's character that gets diffused among at least four characters on this show and maybe even five if you want to include Sam.
Yeah.
When you were talking made me think of just how much I love Veronica Mars and just – well, because I do feel like so many shows have that kind of dichotomy, which is either your parents or your friends, but they also suck. Or your parents are like, you know, kind of strict, square disciplinarians, but like, they secretly rule. But I love Gilmore Girls and I love Veronica Mars for saying parents can be cool and also good.
Which
is like what I think really you should aspire to be. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being your kids' friends as long as it's very clear you are also and kind of primarily their parent.
For sure.
It's interesting, too, when you look at just how – because Veronica Mars was, what, 2004?
I think it started in 2004.
So it's a difference of 5 years and it's so much darker than this. The fact – I think part of what makes it so mind-blowing that they refuse to air Kim Kelly is My Friend is that you look at any number of episodes of Veronica Mars and
every one of them.
Infinitely darker.
Every one of them, yeah.
Every single one of them. So I don't know if that's just, you know, the difference between
UPN.
NBC and UPN where they were like, no one's watching anyway, so fuck.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Ash.
Yeah,
and,
anytime.
Awesome.
I'm, you know – I've got something to prove now. So.
No, we're doing more, so we'd love to have you back for it.
This is always fun. Thank you for having me.
And you're going to come back for another movie or another episode of Freaks and Geeks, or you know, we've got The Sopranos coming up as well. So yeah, you know, we're going to have you on for that. Next week,
you could do something without teenagers in it.
But who would I even be?
Next week, we're doing episode 105 with your significant other, Bart Nickerson, and writing partner for Tests and Breasts. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited to – we haven't had Bart on. And
no.
I'm excited to – we talk a lot about him. He's sort of the third man. So I'm excited to finally have, you know
– Me and you being the first two men?
No, I meant like the movie The Third Man.
Oh, of course.
How they're talking about him through most of it.
Yes.
But I'm glad that I clarified that. I am at PM Iskov on Instagram and Twitter. We are at Podcast Like 1999 on Instagram and Twitter. You are at...
forget again.
Don't worry.
And I know
it's like Ash Lyle,
something like that.
I think I'm at Ash and Lyle.
Yes, I think that's what it is. Kenny is at Nybart. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tune in next week for episode 105. Thanks. Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it. You want a podcast like it. 1999.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.